The Anchored City podcast is recorded in Anchorage, Alaska, on the traditional lands of the Dena'ina Athabaskan people.
I have heard the oldest stories that the wisest man never told. And I cast aside my worries and just went digging for gold. And I will scale the highest mountains looking for the bluest blue. But of all the roads I'll ever walk, I can't have you.
Welcome to the Anchored City Podcast, where we're connecting with Anchorage's soul through her histories, stories, and people. I'm your host, Joel Kiekenfeld. Back in April of 2023, Anchorage voters passed Proposition 14 by a 12-point margin. That proposition dedicates marijuana tax money to childcare and early childhood education, an estimated $4 to $6 million per year. These funds seem to come at just the right time. Since 2019, the number of licensed childcare programs in Alaska has dropped by 20%. In Anchorage, for the first time in 20 years, there are fewer than 200 licensed programs. The scarcity of programs, as well as the high cost and lack of high-quality childcare, means that 51% of Alaskan families cannot participate fully in the workforce. And even when families can participate, the costs are high, with many childcare spots costing up to $1,800 per month in Anchorage. In Alaska, childcare can account for as much as 15% of parents' income. On this episode, I'm joined by members of the Anchorage Childcare and Early Education Fund implementation team. Joining me are Trevor Storrs, Kathleen McArdle, and Jessica Simonson. We discuss how the Anchorage Child Care and Early Education Fund is being implemented and how the marijuana tax dollars might be used to address the needs of families and child care workers in Anchorage. This episode is the first of three following the Anchorage Child Care and Early Education Fund. Here's my conversation with Trevor, Kathleen, and Jessica.
That I have yet to cross, and I have dreamed of faraway places where imagination just gets lost. And I would search the wide world over for one proverb that is true. But of all the roads I'll ever walk, I can't have you.
I'm Jessica Simonson, and I'm a parent representative on the implementation team. And I utilize childcare. I have four of my own young children, one who's school age. So dealing with the setback of the Anchorage School District times and looking for after school care, as well as I have younger children who have full day care for their childcare.
I am Kathleen McArdle. I'm the president and CEO of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. I got tapped to participate in the implementation team. So many of our members describe workforce availability being such a huge issue impacting their businesses, and childcare availability and accessibility is a big driver of that. And nationwide, Chamber of Commerce's are becoming actively involved in childcare. It's such a big issue impacting our economy, and I am grateful to be part of this team to support Anchorage and Anchorage businesses.
And I'm Trevor Storrs, President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust. I've been with the organization for 12 years. The focus of the organization is as a statewide leader on the prevention of child abuse and neglect. And a core aspect of being able to prevent child abuse and neglect is really ensuring that Families have what we call concrete supports, things like housing, food, and of course, childcare when they have financial stability. There are less stressors and less risk of some of the factors that then lead to child abuse and neglect occurring. We were also the organization that funded, with other partners, local and nationally, that actually put the ballot on the ticket back in 23 to establish this fund. So very honored to have been be able to be a part of that and see this happening for Anchorage.
So you've all mentioned briefly that you're part of the implementation team for this Anchorage Child Care and Early Education Fund. And we'll talk about a little bit in just a second about what the fund is, if people are wondering. But who are the other partners that are part of this implementation team as you're working to get this started?
Well, at the Children's Trust, we worked with the other members of who got the ballot onto the ticket and moved it forward to then look at, all right, how do we ensure that we get a well-rounded perspective? So one was through the implementation team, and one was how do we be transparent and communicate with the community? So on this team, of course, we have assembly members. They were key in this. Kathleen, representing business. We have the municipality staff, so the Department of Health is there, as well as their childcare licensing staff are there. They have that knowledge and experience. And of course, we have other industry experts like THRED. We have a Head Start. We have a representative of the school board, things of that nature. And then the biggest experts are making sure that we have individuals who are living this. So we have parents who are on, as well as providers. And that's where Jessica comes in. So really trying to get this well-rounded. We also have a representative from the base who manages their childcare. They're involved. Am I missing? Trying to go through the list in my head. But that hopefully gives people an idea that we really try to get well-rounded. And then recognizing you can't have everybody on this team, we also created opportunities to have conversations with businesses, with community leaders, as well as parents and providers to collect the info to best determine how do we use this very nice fund, but yet it's a small fund, so it's limited of the overall impact. And how best to use it.
So let's just talk a little bit about what is this fund. So do you guys, I know there's an acronym for it, ACCEE. How do you all go about saying it shorter than its long name? First of all.
Some of us have said ACE or just the Child Care Fund.
Okay. So just tell me and tell listeners a little bit, what is this fund? Where did it come from? And what is it designed to do?
It came from Proposition 14, was that the one? And so it takes the marijuana tax funds and sets aside funds that are going to be directly contributing to childcare and early learning. And so this implementation team is talking to business owners and other stakeholders to see how we can best be effective, because we don't have funds to do everything. But like Trevor was saying, we can make a difference with what we have. So how to best do that? And then the implementation team will set up a board who will pr propose a budget to the mayor and the assembly on how to use the funds.
Yeah, the whole idea behind the implementation team was to kind of do some of that hard work first, and recognizing that we have a big challenge. We have an immediate need today, but we also have to create systems that are sustainable for tomorrow. And it's finding that balance. So really trying to meet the need of the public, because I know that there's just a huge need, and people are like, hey, just address the emergency. And we want to be able to do that while still making sure that whatever we create is sustainable and sustainable for the entire system. Because we hope that we can show that an investment like this is very, very positive for our community, whether we're talking on an economic level, a social level, a family level, that we as a community can come back and go, this is the right investment. How do we get more money into that fund to do greater work that's already been done?
And I'd add on that the Proposition 14 didn't exactly prescribe how the funds would be utilized in the child care and early education space. It did, though, prescribe for an accountability board, as Jessica mentioned, to be established. So yeah, to Trevor's point, we are making a informed recommendation, doing all that research and legwork now to help set that accountability board up for success.
So something that crosses my mind is, as I'm listening to y'all talk about what the fund is and kind of where it came from, is maybe even the step before that of like, okay, so we're going to tax marijuana sales in the city of Anchorage, and the question of kind of what should we use that money for? I guess I would love to hear why choose early childhood education and childcare. What was the reasoning for making the decision to spend these funds in that way?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. One is, why invest in the early stages of life? An economist, Heckman, shows that the earlier that we invest, the greater return on investment. So if we wait to invest in our community members when they are 17, 18, we're lucky to get dollar per dollar. So there's no return. But everything shows that when we do early childhood education and investment, that we can get $10 to $13 on return. What that means is they are ready to enter kindergarten ready. So they're prepped, and then we can see reading scores go up, math scores go up. We have people graduating. They have the skill set to either go into the trades or into university, and we start creating the future workforce. We also see when, as I mentioned, childcare, it is an economic support to families. We lessen the burden on some of the other state systems, like the child welfare that's at times overrun, as well as maybe they don't get evicted because they're not having to pay childcare and not their rent, things of that nature. And then obviously, as a city, and probably Kathleen can talk about this, businesses, if they want to attract employees, but also we know our population in Anchorage, but also the state, is decreasing. That affects our businesses. Less people are buying. So if we want them to stay, and we need to provide one of the core services for the working force, which is that childcare. And we're seeing at a faster rate the younger parents with young kids leaving because that service isn't available. So that's why we looked at this, and why marijuana dollars. We have very limited tax base here in Anchorage. So one, we didn't want to go, hey, how about a new tax? We as a community weren't ready for that. That's a completely different conversation. And property tax already pays for the level of service. So we were looking at what does exist that makes sense. And there was a lot of concern about legalizing marijuana from community members. It did pass, we recognized, so now we're taxing it. How do we put those taxes to the best work of our community? And we saw that with early childhood for all the reasons that I outlined.
Well, thanks for that kind of early childhood care and education affects the larger economy, affects the larger community, affects folks being able to work or not work. So I really appreciate you drawing the picture of why this is so important for us to do. What is the process that you all have been using as you've been working as the implementation team tasked with this? What process have you gone through to get this fund up and running?
Sure, I'll start. But Jessica is one of the co-chairs, so I'd love for her to chime in as well. But this, we've been meeting on a regular basis, this multifaceted public-private group, this implementation team, to review best practices, review results from community feedback, to hear from speakers from around the state on some of their experiences and childcare initiatives in their communities. It's been just a really well-functioning experience from my perspective to take a broad look at where we are, where we'd hope to be, and integrating that community feedback that is so integral. There's so many stakeholders that we are considering at every step of this conversation that it's been really useful. I was able to attend several of the community listening sessions, and the feedback that was gathered through those direct events where conversations can be had, small group discussions, and the ability to capture really what are pain points and what are the levers that they see that would be most effective to implement really impactful change. And capturing all of those, and hopefully we'll be landing on a recommendation soon.
Thanks, Kathleen. It's been really exciting, like hearing from other communities, like what Juno has been able to do with their fund. We've been able to hear from a representative from JBEAR about some things that has worked for their childcare, some initiatives. But, Trevor really talked about how dire and how important it's become for us to focus on childcare. And I just one of the things that Austin did was we put out a white paper that talks about how, for the first time in a long time, Anchorage has under 200 licensed programs. Personally, I've talked to families who have struggled for long periods of time to get childcare. People who, the moment they find out they're pregnant, have to get on waiting lists and put down money to try and get a spot, and then sometimes still only getting a spot when that child is born and then turns a year old. So if you just think about how long that is, it's very stressful on the families. Some of the other feedback that we've heard is that in addition to people looking at moving out of Anchorage and out of Alaska, they're also like considering not having multiple kids or waiting to have kids, because it's just been so hard to get childcare. So a lot of people also talked about how they've had to adjust their hours. They've left positions, in order to accommodate caring for their children.
So I think you've naturally moved us into exactly what I was going to ask about next, Jessica. So that's, yeah, I know you all have been meeting with community stakeholders, having meetings. There's been a survey that's been out there. What are some of the things that you've been hearing from the community as you've been asking the question about how these funds should be spent? Like, what have been the thoughts that the community has been sharing with you all?
I think one of my favorite things that stands out is out of all the providers, the childcare providers who were surveyed, and we asked them, something like, how do you like your job? And almost 100% were like, love it, right? And then they were asked, how worried are you that you might have to leave in the near future? And a big percentage of them are worried. And the number one reasons are wages and, things like health insurance. We saw in our studies that, oftentimes those employees could go and work retail and not be responsible for, keeping pe little people safe. And yet, they're choosing to do childcare. So it's been challenging. I think the majority of the people who answered the survey said really affecting those wages for childcare workers would be the biggest difference.
Kathleen can probably also share. I love that she attended so many of these. I was able to attend a couple myself. And we really heard from folks that, also from parents, they want to see these providers paid. When we look at what they do, I can't stress enough, they're not babysitters. People think childcare is like getting your neighbor's 12-year-old to watch your couple kids while you go out to a dinner and a movie. It is not that. Majority of our child care centers are licensed. They meet rigorous standards. Many of the staff, they get degrees or go through a professional development and so forth. It is a profession. And when you pay them less than a gas attendant, it's really hard not just to keep them wage-wise, but even their hearts. As Jessica was saying, these individuals just love working with the kids. They're willing to spend 8 hours with toddlers running around and being who toddlers are, which is exciting, but can be very energy draining. And most parents can relate to that, and they know that. They're willing to, but they too, when we see inflation, they have to pay their rent. They want health care. They need to take care of themselves and their families as well. When you can't do that by doing what you love, then you have to go do something that you don't. And that's not good for them. It's not good for our families, our economy, or the industry. And we just heard that. And everybody's like, find a way to allow these individuals to be professionals and earn professional wages. But Kathleen, you attended a lot of these. What were you hearing?
Well, around the wage issue, there's also the staffing element that childcare workers are there's not enough teachers and early education teachers. And some of it is the low wages have pushed people out the door. And that's some of the reasons why some of the licensed provider closures have happened in our community is that there's just not enough to keep the doors open, and it doesn't make sense. Additionally, is some of the things they were asking for in those listening sessions is some support around that staffing. If someone has to take a sick day, what happens? We don't want to promote presenteeism, and those kids then catching a contagious condition and passing it back to their families, and then there's more people out of the workforce later, right? That's not anything anyone wants to promote. So rotational coverage potentially, in addition to the paid time to actually take and care for yourself. Professional development opportunities was another common theme. To Trevor's point, we're not talking about just babysitters. We're talking about people setting up children for success and teaching them really valuable education during extremely formative years. And so, how to best implement that? What are the good strategies to use in classroom management? What are the developmental milestones people need to be aware of taking care of these kids? Responses to things like really critical community responses like crisis and trauma, behavioral impacts, all of those things that are very real and prevalent in our community. And right now, childcare and early educators aren't always equipped to handle them in the best way. Yeah, there's just a lot of needs out there, and it becomes a little daunting, I think, when we fully consider what our approach will be. But those were definitely some of the themes, and it was around a lot of the employee experience, making sure we've got people the resources that they need to do their job well, and to support them in really having that be a career choice for them.
Thank you for sharing all those different aspects of what you've been hearing and kind of what the situation looks like here in the city as it relates to this topic. I'm wondering, I know you probably can't say what your recommendations are going to be yet, but what are the types of things that you are considering based on the feedback that you've been getting? What are some of the things that that your group is looking at as possibilities for recommendations?
Definitely looking at options of how do we increase the salaries, whether it's a direct, like we'll say, a bonus system or a professional system that people apply into through the support of their provider and the check goes directly to the individual. Or there may be a program that we work directly with providers, they give info, which then earns them funding to then give to their employees, things of that nature. So we're looking at that. Other ways of increasing salaries is there a way that we can support stipends that are going to families to cover childcare? Can those increase and that then better support? But the question is, does that get to the employee or not? So we're looking at those different avenues. Other people have done it. Juno, that Jessica mentioned, is a great example. They've been doing this for a few years, and it's been a direct payment to the individuals that get that. So we're looking, and then of course, whatever way we do this, we have to then look at how what system needs to be set up to be able to manage that. And that's one of the things we made sure that there is funding within this fund that then supports the administrative. So that is a piece of it and making sure. So again, we're trying to weigh the immediate need while also making sure the sustainability is there and it's ongoing. Other things we're looking at that relates to the fund is, well, is there a way that we can lessen the cost? So we know that our schools, there are schools that have classroom openings, vacancies, and or looking at consolidating. Can we use those buildings? Those are already our buildings. Can we give those to a provider at no cost or very low cost, say $1 a year, that concept, so it lessens their cost so they can better pay their staff and up it. So that's also another thing. And maybe those funds can help pay for any of those facilities and or adjust them, things of that nature. So those are kind of the angles we're going at and looking. We're not expecting all, and we're thinking there's going to be 5 to 6 million, closer to five, but that can grow. Closer to that six is, can we also support any capital? So any way we can lessen the cost. So many providers can be home providers, so it's out of their home. How do we lessen their burden to go through the process? And or sometimes the upfront cost is too much. Can we give a grant to cover those initial costs so they can establish themselves so that that saves them money? So we're coming from a really what we call a mixed-use perspective. All of it's not about how do we make big, gigantic centers because there's many families that want the smaller, and or we also know a lot of our newer families, that's a way for a parent to stay home. Is they actually help with other kids, as well as some of the immigration families that are coming in through immigration. It's actually a great way for them to start their own business and be able to support their family, their kids, and others who are coming into the country with them, into our state and their neighborhood in general. So it really looking at that mixed delivery system.
And one of my favorite strategies, hearing about that another state has done, and JBEAR also, is to allow employees to bring one child fully subsidized into the system. And I hadn't like considered what the impacts of that would be, but to hear about this as a case study, and then it actually making an impact with the on-base childcare system, is that gets one kid in care, yeah, but it brings an employee who can maybe open up a whole classroom of kids. Or there's many other employees that are needed throughout the system to make meals, to help with prep or administrative, and to help relieve that burden and give them the space helps staff the centers. To Trevor's point, if we just offer family vouchers, as much as that would be impactful, it doesn't solve the capacity issue, which is one of the major drivers we are looking at solving for. The most important thing I think would be to increase the capacity, and that would allow, for more centers to expand, maybe even open, make sure that they're using their facilities and resources in the most effective way for our community.
Jessica, maybe I'll ask you this question since you're a co-chair, but what happens next for you all as the implementation team? I'm having a hard time with that word today. what happens next for you all? What's the next step?
Hopefully, I get this right. So we are finished up in our public comment. So the next part is we're putting together what'll be suggested, and for how the board will be made up. And so our next couple months will really be focused on who will make up the board and making our recommendations. And then this fall, those people get seated so that they can get started.
And just for clarity, as the fellow co-chair, the board is that oversight board. One of the things we wanted to ensure was we recognize the assembly is responsible for a lot of things, and they can't be knowledgeable of everything. So no different, they rely on lawyers to give them legal advice and so forth. So we wanted to make sure that the fund was being overseen by folks that are in the biz, as we say, as well as those with lived experience. So parents that are utilizing the system and providers. So what will happen is the assembly will put forward an ordinance here in the next few weeks that outlines that structure. They will talk through it and then approve it. And then the next stage will be putting out the applications and the mayor at that time, and by the time this happens, it will be probably after the runoff election, will probably happen in the summer. They will start selecting individuals and getting them onto the board and then moving that. And then what we will have by end of June is what we call a strategic plan. What we think should be happening over the next 1 to 3 years, that when this board comes on, they have it. They can build a budget around it and then move it forward. And as they move forward, use that plan, update it as they go along, and being able to implement it. So it really is that kind of implementation aspect.
If listeners are wanting to follow along that process or learn more about the fund, where is there a place they can go to get some of that information?
The website is always the best, which is Care for Kids Anchorage. If you type that into Google, it has all the information, and we're trying to keep that up to date.
Great. And we'll make sure that we have a link as well in the show notes to that. I
Right.
want to off script for just a second and ask you all if you could dream out a year or two or five, what would your hope be? Once this is all implemented and it's up and running, what would you hope it would look like in Anchorage, once the fund is out there and doing what it's intended to do?
I can start, I guess. I know what I'd like to see is not only the number of providers increasing, but the experience for families is just having access to childcare, not having to be worried about wait lists, being able to have not have to make the important decision on if a family member stays home and out of the workforce. And then the trickle-down effects of that is our employers across Anchorage definitely have abundant options for staffing. Right now, there's approximately, I think it's two, but maybe it's three open jobs for every person looking for work. And if we could flip that on its head, that would be really substantial for our community. We've got a lot of needs that we for workers and on the career side that Anchorage trying to be a really thriving place to live and work. And this would be a really important way to help attract and retain talent to our community. And yeah, just to be able to have access to that for people to be able to grow their families when and if they choose to, and not have that be a reason that holds them back.
As a full-time working single parent, my kids are in childcare more of their awake time than they are home with me. And, it's a very big choice. And I really hope and dream that people can have more access to more better childcare and not have to worry so much about wait lists and high costs And, whether or not there's going to be a lot of turnover or there's going to be closures in the childcare because of short staffing. The most important thing for these kids, 95% of their brain is developing up until the age of five. So that's why it's so integral, that they have safe, secure, nurturing relationships. And when you have a lot of turnover in the child's classroom, one week it's one person and then the next it's just changing. It's a trauma all on its own. And so really everybody recognizing that these aren't babysitters, this is not daycare. They're not caring for days. They're caring for our future generation. The future generation who's then going to take these jobs and take Anchorage to the next place. And so just having more steady workforce where they can earn a decent wage. And, studies are showing that the childcare workers are more likely to live in poverty with their own children. Being able to elevate them out of that, that's really my dream.
I love that dream, and now it's hard to even follow. I love it. I'll be a little bit more of the realist, just for the listeners and so forth. My hope and dream of the first year to three is just stabilize. The likelihood that 5 million will make all new spots, great. But if we can stabilize the industry and prevent any more closures, and maybe even support the organizations that have additional space, but they don't have the staff, if they could even add that staff. Like, if we could just even do that in the first few years, I think it will be hard because people will still be struggling, but maybe not struggling as much. We've got thumbs up. Because it's important to remember this issue didn't just happen overnight. COVID played a part, but COVID wasn't the cause. We've been having this issue, it just magnified it. And we reach that tipping point. And when you reach it, everything starts to tumble. And what we're trying to do is get back to that other tipping point. And it's going to take some time and some patience. So one of the things I dream is that our community will give us those patience and understanding. And then even maybe then we'll also start the other conversation going, 5 million is not enough. How do we as a community best 20 million? How do we get to universal where everybody has this early childhood support that they need across the board in a mixed delivery? How do we achieve that as a community? And if we could start those conversations in the next couple of years, we'd be really on the right path to amazing success.
I feel like we all just are manifesting our future. So speak it, it will come.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I like that idea as well. My last question to you all would be, what did I miss, or is there something else you'd want to add for listeners that we maybe haven't covered yet?
The thing I would just emphasize, and I kind of mentioned it, was as an individual, and when you're making $20, $25 an hour, even $30 or $40, when you hear somebody has $5 million to spend, that just seems like a lot of money from a personal perspective. Like I can't even earn that amount, I think, in my lifetime. So that just seems like a lot. But when you're looking at a community our size, so a great example is Juno. They are giving direct dollars. They spend about $2 to $3 million and providing, well, they're a fraction of our size. So our 5 million does not equal their three. So I just want to leave our listeners with thank you for the beautiful pour in the bucket. It's not a drop, it is a pour, but it doesn't fill that bucket. So please, we'll need patience and understanding that this 5 million will only go so far. We'll stretch it. We'll see how we can braid it in the sense of we're encouraging the state to invest. We're also encouraging the feds to look at if and maybe some local funding with funders and things like that, that maybe we can stretch that 5 million into six, seven, who knows, things of that nature. And then see the success that we have and really be open to having that conversation of, How do we fill that bucket? What does that really look like for us?
Yeah, to amplify that, I know I heard in the part of the conversation along the way, and I'll leave it unattributed, but someone said they had full faith in their Anchorage neighbors and supporting the cannabis industry and making sure this is a robust fund for childcare and early education. So, yeah, the more we support cannabis industry locally, the more we'll be in the bucket to support kids.
Well, thank you all so much for taking time to share with me and with listeners the work that you're doing, and we'll keep track of what you're doing. We're gonna have another couple conversations this year following this, so folks can be aware of how this is rolling out. But thank you so much for taking your time to talk with me, but also for all the work that you've been doing on behalf of families and children here in Anchorage.
Thank you so much, Joel, for doing this, and I look forward to the future conversations.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity and for inviting us on.
My thanks to Trevor, Kathleen, and Jessica for joining me and talking about this important issue that's facing Anchorage. And thank you to you too for listening. For more information on the Anchorage Child Care and Early Education Fund, go to careforkidsanchorage.com. Until next time, I'm Joel Kuechenfeld. Be good out there. Thank you so much for listening. We're grateful for you, our listeners. If you are grateful for what you're hearing, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and recommend us to your friends. Those are small things, but they make a huge difference. The Anchored City Podcast is a production of the Anchorage Urban Training Collaborative. The mission of the collaborative is to train the heads, hearts, and hands of urban leaders to love their city and seek its peace. When we say peace, we mean a desire to see a world where all things are the way they're supposed to be for all people. Find us online at anchorageutc.org or on social media at anchorageutc. Resources used to make this episode can be found in the show details. Our theme music is by Anchorage's own Monica Lettner.